This I want to make my background not blurry. How do I do this?
If you go into the settings, I think under video and effects.
Background and effects. None. Okay, there we go. Because I have this art. Why am I going to
have
this?
Yeah, I was just like, oh. It's like you seem like you had a lot of really cool art behind you, and I'm like, oh, I wonder why she's hiding it. But
yeah, this is. I never get to spend any time in my office because I have two special needs children, and my office is full of dangerous stuff and collectibles, so I don't want them.
Oh yeah,
in here for either reason. And very exciting to be in here. So I was like, yeah, I don't want it to be blurry. I like this. This spent so long, like to put together. This is like my favorite aspect of like my whole house, actually.
Yeah, it's really well laid out. Which piece is your favorite?
Okay, so it's not in direct sight line. I'm going to move it, and it actually comes with a really fun story. So this, do you see like the little Robbie the Rabbits?
Oh, yeah.
So that photo came from Japan. From the guy, the gentleman who designed Robbie the Rabbit. Twitter's the only, I'm not calling it X, Twitter's the only social media platform that I still like actively use. And I saw that he was looking for a Robbie the Rabbit plush, but a very specific one, the movie version. Now this movie is old, so it's very hard to get this plushie, and those who have it, I guess, are charging for a high price. But I saw he was looking for it, so I just offered it to him because to me it was like you're sending it back home. Like I don't trade or sell. Like everything is I tend to collect to keep. So I didn't feel right, especially like with the creator, to charge him. And he didn't feel, I guess he felt bad to just take something. Yeah. And so I was like, well, I just like, I'm happy with just an autograph. And he takes these really fun photos of his Robbie figures at like Disney. And so I asked if he could autograph that, and I would be happy for that to be as a trade. And he went like above and beyond and sent it in a frame, and that is gonna be my favorite piece. I don't think there's anything that's gonna be the top.
Yeah, it's kind of one of a kind. Very like if not like the fact that there might be more of those exist, that like the story that goes with it is unique to you.
It's just so fun. They all have like blood on there. It's so yeah. Cute and like horror aspect. So I was so happy. I was so happy when I got that. And he seems very happy with now that his collection is complete. It's so sad that like he wasn't given that version, and he is trying to complete his collection currently.
Yeah.
And he just got the- Now his collection is complete, and my wall is complete.
Yeah, that's really awesome. This is Tamara, and we have only interacted once in person for like 5 minutes, and so this is our first time like speaking in I think it was like 2013 or something. I remember it was at the E3 where they announced the 3DS, because I remember going up and Nintendo had this big platform you went up to, and they had a bunch of women behind each 3DS, and like that, like it was the most awkward. I've only been to E3 once, and it was the most awkward thing of like, oh my god, Nintendo is announcing a new thing, and to see it I have to like, there's just a woman who just didn't seem to know anything about the product, and just standing there, and I'm like, oh, this is cool. Do you know anything? She's like, no. And I'm like, okay, so you're just kind of watching me as I interact with this. And so I remember that distinctively of like, that's the E3 I went to. And we had a brief deal because you were there as part of your job, I believe.
Yes, I was there for work, but I was not working a booth, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Not that I have done, I have worked, because actually For that reason, I guess just to give context, I worked at Rockstar Games for like 18 years, and I did a few of the like the convention circuits, and it, for that very reason in which you spoke, like they were actually very strategic. They had the testers, like instead of hiring floor models, they had like people who worked on the games and stuff like that showcase and stuff like the demos when we did do them for that exact reason, because they wanted the consumer or whoever was playing the demo to like actually be able to get as much answered as possible. So like I've done at the New York Comic Con and I think PAX. Never, I don't think anything quite as big as E3, but it sucks when you like do have questions and you can't get any answers.
Yeah, I guess the way that I originally know you is from your blog, your website, That Girl site.
Yes, and I did juggle both. I put down That Girl site for a couple of, well, and for a couple of years because I had been working in the industry. Working on my own on my blog was a lot of fun for the few years that I did it, and I consider now that I've like left the industry and I'm doing like mom life at home, I'm consider like going back because I do like games and there's nobody really around to talk to about them. So I miss blogging for that reason.
What inspired you to create the site in the first place, and like can you tell like a little bit about how that started?
Way back like with MySpace and for the same things, like I wanted to talk about like toys and games, but wasn't sure who of my friends was really into anything. So I would put in like the journal section, and it started with my original title was like I Heart Cool Shit, like I Heart Cool Shit. And then when I wanted to take it and make it into a site, that was taken. And so I came up with a different name and took it off of MySpace and just like made it a direct website and blog for like 8 to 10 years.
Yeah, I believe I first became aware of it. I think like Kotaku or Polygon or somebody just had like a like, hey, here's cool stuff that you like, gamer, cool gamer stuff, and they link to something that you had posted, and then I had seen like, oh, this is someone who just their whole website is just posting cool stuff. And so I was like, I didn't know that was a thing you could do, is just be like, look at this cool stuff that exists. And I was just like, I gotta follow this person because they're like, you were an original tastemaker, as far as I was aware of, like the whole thing was just like, check out this cool stuff. And I was just like, everything she's posting about is awesome. I gotta like follow her stuff. Like I was going through Twitter a few years back of like, I wonder who the original person I had followed, and that was you. You were like the I got on Twitter to follow you and be like, wonder what cool shit she's gonna post about.
That is probably one of the kindest things I think I've ever heard. Like, thank you. It's nice to know that like your stuff is being read and appreciated, and you're not just like consistently posting to yourself. So that does, that means the world to me. Thank you.
As a fellow creator, it definitely there's a level of like, you always get the advice of like, just make something for yourself, make something that you care about, but you want to know that someone else cares what you put out there. And yeah, it was both a thing of like, I appreciated the things that you posted. I had no money, so I was like, man, one day when I get money, I'm gonna buy these cool things she talks about. But like, you would find like unique stuff that you don't see every day, and I would go like, no one else is talking about this, and this site knew about this stuff. And knowing that that was a thing of just like going around the internet and finding stuff that people might know about, I was just like, maybe I could do that. And Last Geek started as a blog trying to be like at least somewhat like yourself.
Awesome. And you've been around for so long too, so I'm glad that you're still putting out content and trying new forms of content and that I can be a part of it. That's awesome.
Yeah, I never stepped into the game industry like you managed to yourself. I just was like, okay, I'll just keep making posts about games, and then eventually people don't read as much. I was like, I'll make videos and that podcast, you know, you move with the tides, and I've never made it big. I'm like, who knows how many people are going to watch or listen to this, but it is a thing of like, I never gave up on my dream of creating things and I'm still doing such. But I want to talk a little bit more about you. Was there a moment where that girl site had a moment where it kind of took off, where you kind of saw a lot more people coming, or was being reposted by the other sites never really have a big impact on you?
It did. It did have an impact. I have what I hope is a fun story. So many, many, many years ago, when I first started the website, I went to Japan for the first time. And I was introduced to, it was like a group was introduced to a, I gotta remember, it's like 15 years so since so I can't remember his name. He was showing us around Harajuku, and he had this, an iPhone, and on the back of his iPhone, it was painted like original Game Boy. So I took a picture of it and I posted it on my blog.
Yeah.
And forgot about it. A couple of months later, my site crashed. It just couldn't figure out what was going on. Just, it was getting destroyed. It turned out Kotaku and many, many other websites. Oh, what was this? This was, again, so long ago, a very big tech website at the time. They're not around anymore. Gizmodo.
That could be so many things.
Gizmodo.
Oh yeah, Gizmodo. Yep, that definitely.
Gizmodo. They had posted the photo from my blog onto their website as an April Fool's joke.
Oh.
Because at the time, it was the first first iPhones. So the case of the Game Boys didn't exist. So they were like, oh, in the wild, there's a phone case. And everybody thought it was real. It crashed my site. But it wasn't. It gave lots of people ideas. And I got written to by a small handful of people who asked to send me like their versions of the phone case so that I could like pick my favorite official one.
Oh wow.
And I was about it's and post also about it on the site. And then a few months later basically is where the phone cases of the Game Boy started appearing everywhere. So that's my like weird, unbelievable, but I have like, you can trace it history, yeah, to claim to fame, was that before those phone cases existed, I took a picture of somebody else's, posted it, people liked it. And I'm sure that the phone case would have eventually been made had I not posted, because it's, but yeah, so the blog post is what helped set off the Game Boy phone cases for the iPhone many, many moons ago.
Wow, that is crazy. Yeah, it's something you do something and you don't see how it's gonna to lead where it's going, but it's just those crazy links.
Yeah, I had no idea. I just thought it was a cool phone case, and yeah. And yeah, they spun it as an April Fool's joke, and so that got me. I went from like a couple of hundred views on the site to at that at that brief moment, brief period, that was like half a million for people were very excited to fucking play phone cases. And so that was a very big deal for me. I never forget that. That was really like, that made me, it was like, oh, okay, if I, but that's my impact.
Yeah.
I'm not that it would have happened anyway, but it feels nice to have that little moment in time kind of connection to something small that went viral in a moment in time.
Yeah, I think there's something about being a creator that there's like so many people putting out content in you know, the age of the internet, that it's 90% work, but there's that 10% luck that just, if you're not doing the work, then you're not going to get the luck. But that luck can be the biggest thing about how anybody sees that you're out there.
Yeah, that's exactly. It was, I just so happened to see the phone. It was, his was painted. Everybody else was a phone case, but like the cool fact was that the very first one was actually painted onto the phone, and it looked beautiful. And yeah, I was very lucky to have just time and a place, took the picture and posted it. And then that is around the time when I learned like a couple of the like Kotaku and started with a D joystick, that there was a couple of the bloggers who would had my blog on like a watch. So if I would occasionally post something that I found, it would get picked up and be put there. So I got some traction from posting a couple of things or finding things. Another one of it's just me like this is not me like I feel like I didn't really find anything. I'm just really old and I was there first.
Yeah.
But like when I first started it and started blogging, and another fun one that got me a lot of views was, and I found this on a Spanish blog, and it was like the very first cosplay of Jessica Nigri in her Pikachu outfit, and I posted that also because I'd never like the same very very like I just like looking for other people who are doing cool things, and I was just like, look, they're doing this and this is cool, and I wanted to showcase other people doing cool stuff, and I had posted that, and that got picked up by a bunch of websites also. So it was just like really fun to be on the internet. Like before, like you had it's so hard to keep up. There's so many established like cosplayers, indie games. It gets a bit overwhelming, and so it's hard to figure out where to start. But
Yeah, it's like you were pre-social media, where everyone could just like post like, oh, here's my new cosplay and stuff. You almost like you had to rely on people who could go find these things, and you were someone who like could go like, obviously I don't think it doesn't sound like it was like an intentional where I'm gonna go search. You would just see it something cool and be like, I want to tell people about it, and then people would go like, hey, look, there's someone who knows about this cool stuff.
I think living in New York at the time during early social media was helpful also, because there's a lot of things that happen here I find interesting, and like Comic Cons and stuff like that. I really liked going and trying to meet people, take pictures, find cool artists and stuff like that, so I can add them to the wall.
Was there a point where you kind of noticed that people were taking notice of you, where you kind of thought, oh, this could be a thing?
Yeah, I probably around 2014, 2015, I had started getting invites from Nintendo to like some press events, and I was getting copies of games here and there from different companies, and I was putting some like help to YouTube videos that seemed to be getting some traction. It felt like there was progress. It was kind of scary though, also because people are mean as hell.
Oh, yeah.
So I had crossed over in from gaming into the food blogosphere by doing a guest spot. This is also like what I mean by helping New York helping. There was a big food blogger who's more, he's Connecticut bound, called Dame Drops, and he was coming to New York, and I had just like out of, because I watched him. I was a follower or slam, and I was like, you need to go to this food spot if you're coming to New York. And he said, he was like, yeah, that actually he's putting together like a couple of places in the city, and that the whoever is like recommending it can guest host or like co-host with him. So I did that, and that was nerve-wracking because his audience was a lot bigger than what I was used to, and so that's what was like I'm not used to the comments and stuff like that. I was on 2015, but I was like I was also ha I had already been working in the industry, so it just yeah, it was getting kind of like complicated, so I wanted to put one down and focus on the other, because I think I had actually really started in the industry, and like I started blogging on the side for fun and didn't think that I would do it for very long because I have a very short attention span, so I figured that like I would put one thing out and just, I think one of the first things that put out that had some kind of views, and again was all negative, was when the iPad came out,
Oh, wow.
and the video's still up on my YouTube channel. I left this all up, and I got a lot of views on that, because as an early internet adapter and like streamer before that there was ca capture boxes and all of that stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I took my camera and I aimed it at the TV, and so that's how I was getting my videos 15 years ago up on YouTube, and I was putting up like iPad and Borderlands stuff, and so that was another thing that was getting somewhat views. But it was a lot of people making fun of me for playing with an iPad, even though I had like two cats in the background.
Yeah.
So it was just yeah, you never, even back then, now I don't think you can ever really do anything right on the internet.
Someone's it's gonna be wrong to someone, and you just kind of gotta find the people who care about what you're doing.
Yeah. I was like, yes, I have pets.
Yeah.
iPad is, I was just testing it out, but people were for some reason convinced that I would no longer pay any attention to my animals because I have iPad now. So that was, but yeah, so those couple of instances felt like it could become something if I hunkered, down and like committed to it.
So you started in the industry before you started the blog?
Yeah, that's interesting. My first E3 was maybe was 18. I was young. I'm 42 now, for context. So there's it's it, I had went, I worked at a comic book shop, but
Oh,
I
wow.
did the video game. I managed the video game department. So when my very first E3 was different than the industry side, it was from like the buyer side. So at that point, it's my first exposure to to it was looking for stuff and having to write a report on like what games looked good and what we would consider ordering from the companies to stock in the store. Forbidden Planet. It still exists, but they don't sell video games anymore.
How did you get into the industry proper?
Look, time and a place. So it just so happens that the comic book store that I worked at was a few blocks away from the home base of Rockstar Games. And I worked there for like a year and a half. And being the person who managed the video game department, I got to know so many people who worked there. And eventually, we struck a partnership, and they did two dedicated windows. So this is back when I think the first window might have been San Andreas, and the second one was Midnight Club. I mean, this was a long time ago.
Yeah.
So I had worked there around the time San Andreas came out for PS2, and by the time it came out on Xbox, I was already at that point. I was working for Rockstar. They, I just like asked about applying. It was hard to get in. Like, it took several interviews. But then I did get the job, and started blogging. Maybe I was doing the stuff on MySpace, but like blogging more seriously. Yeah. Maybe like 2 years after that, because I was living in Manhattan, and it just felt like the thing to do.
Yeah, you were like, I know about cool stuff, and I gotta tell people about it.
I didn't have like a wide social group, especially like ones who were into a lot of the same stuff that I was. I mean, I think that's where it's all born from, is when this, like, when you have an interest and you don't have a lot of people, but you want to talk about it.
Yeah, there is like people who are like, oh, the internet's bad and different things. As someone from the Midwest, I definitely have grown up in like, I like D&D, I like video games, and I had no one who cared about any of that stuff. And then you go on the internet and like, there's so many people talking about these things. And I found so many friends, the people I make content with, all have been found through the internet. And yeah, just having that place where you can talk about it, even if it's just a blog, is a beautiful thing. I'm almost kind of surprised that working at Rockstar, you didn't have more people who kind of you felt meshed with you in that way.
No, I did meet a lot more like fellow gamers and stuff like that. But I guess maybe it was a genre. I'm like a survival horror gamer, and maybe that's even more niche. But I did have many good friends there who we are all definitely gamers. Yeah, not many, like, I guess, like outside the office.
Do you think being part of the game industry affected this, your blog at all?
No, because I hid it.
Oh, I hate, you're like, no one needs to know about that.
No one, like, I didn't want people to ask me questions that would get me in trouble, like that type of thing. Yeah. Oh, you know, like, what's in there, like that type of stuff. I'm like the Spider-Man kid. I'm bad with leaks. Like, so it's just best if you don't know where I work. But between that, I wanted to try to see what I could do with my own name and my own ideas and stuff like that. I did not like attaching my name to the company.
Was there the point where like you started to blow up and like you get invited to a Nintendo thing where you're like, oh, I can't do this because I work for Rockstar?
Yes. The company found out I was blogging because my name came, they My name came up in a list of potential good reviewer bloggers
Oh,
to send their game to, and it was like she can't review this. She works here,
wow.
so I was not like in trouble, but I was called into the office. So they were like, "Just so you know, your name is coming up in lists now." So I was like, "All right," and then I cooled it off shortly after because it felt like a conflict of interest. I was taking on more responsibilities at Rockstar and doing more stuff, and so I didn't want to risk that either. And so I backed off like a lot, and it wasn't, thankfully, like it wasn't that hard to do because it was had done it for a few years. I felt like I was able to cross some stuff off my like bucket list,
Yeah.
and at the same time I was, like I was trying to tell myself like the brutal honesty of it's typically I mean, I would be working to get in the industry. And so if I'm there, I like again, I don't want to risk that. So it was easiest choice. And at that point I went like full in and I spun off into more dedicated team. And I got to do a lot more deeper industry work and get stuff into, and I say this with like as much hands off possible. Like I'm not saying that I made anything, but it's input. I did have input that did get put into some of the more recent titles. So that was a huge deal for me. And
Yeah.
it's as like extremely rewarding. So that also I think like helped was that the payoff on the other side was definitely worth it for the time being.
Is your name in the credits on any game?
My name is in the credits for several games. I've done testing since Midnight Club 3. So I've done testing on Midnight Club 3, Manhunt 2, the San Andreas, the Xbox, the PC. So when they were doing like the ports later on, RDR2,
Oh, wow.
Table Tennis, Bully, GTA 4, GTA 5. I was lucky enough to do some small voices in some of the games. I did a voice in Table Tennis. I was also on tested Table Tennis. I am a zombie, one of the zombie voices in Undead Nightmare. So it like again, it's just the sacrifice
Yeah.
was very obviously worth it for me to be able to just really be a part of that. And I think at the time too is I was starting to be given my first like game leads, and my favorite was Chinatown Wars. So I was on Chinatown Wars and my name
Oh,
is in the
wow.
credit for that one. And yeah, there was it's very thankful and fortunate to have been able to like gently touch so many aspects of the game industry from like the blogging side, the tester developer side, and things like that along the way. It's funny because I forget about, not forget, because it's the hectic days
Yeah.
of mom life make me forget, but talking about all of that, it is just it's making me happy. Thank you.
Well, I mean, you've done a lot of amazing things. You should enjoy your what you've accomplished. Was the time that like you kind of took on more responsibility? Was that when you kind of went like, I should shut down the site? Because sadly, if you go to the site, it's not there anymore.
Yes. And I regret not keeping the website just for holding it for nostalgia reasons.
Yeah.
It was taking on a lot of responsibilities, and definitely felt like I wanted to make a choice so that I wouldn't find myself in a troublesome situation. I had managed to last that long, like 7-8 years without getting in trouble. And again, it's understandably so. It's like you have one of your people who work here who are also a blogger. I can understand their concern if they had, but they never, thankfully, they never really asked me to stop or scolded me. They just let me know that I was coming up in reviewer lists.
Which, I mean, on one hand is a little bit of a compliment that you...
I did leave, even though I was nervous. I did leave a little excited. I was like, oh my goodness, you mean if I didn't work here, I would be able to review a game from here? That's amazing.
Yeah.
So that was funny. But yeah, it was very interesting to times. And to go to some of the Nintendo events. Nintendo was the biggest one that I got to work with, and they were super cool. They were like really, really nice. And it was interesting, like when they call the bloggers, and one of the people like I almost always dealt with, which I thought was funny in that cute awesome way, was Krista, who was on like the Nintendo Minute.
Yeah, the Kin Krista.
So it was, I was like, oh, you're not only like host of the show, you're showcasing to the bloggers. So it felt like I was getting my demo like by celebrity. I was really excited every time. She was so kind.
You've had such a big, I guess, career both in games and as a blogger and stuff. I gotta ask, what are you up to lately?
Mom life. I have two kids now, and they are 2 and just turned 6. So I actually left the industry for them. They're both special needs, and I could not. We moved to Long Island for more space, and I couldn't give the full time because they're working on 5. So I left 2 years ago, and they've been working on 5 for a very long time. That's not a secret, you know, like obviously. Yeah. So they need people like really in on that. And I couldn't, I had to work, I have to, I had to be home. So, I spoke to them about it, and they were really understanding, and we had very polite parting ways. And it's been 2.5 years, I think. And I will probably go back to, either blogging or industry stuff in probably about a year or so once my youngest is back in school. Right now I am, besides like the full-time mom life, I am dabbling in trying to launch a small business. So like I make keychains and stickers and stuff like that to try to keep myself creatively sane.
I saw you have a Etsy shop.
Yeah. So that's what I do now too, because it's the like the mom stuff again. It's like full time. But I like to also, I just have to keep busy in a creative space somehow. And not that that's not creative, it sounds like, but you know, like on like on the side. That's not Paw Patrol and all that stuff.
Adult, adult creativity.
Yes, like because I still love my survival horror, so I still need to express all that kind of stuff that way. So, and that's been kind of fun. I did about a year and a half, but very slow. Making the stuff, taking the photos, writing the things, posts, everything takes so much work.
Oh yeah.
But it's still fun to learn. I just like acquiring skills. Yes.
Yeah. You always gotta keep learning. I heard the phrase of like you gotta keep growing or else you'll start dying.
I think that like that's what it because it's that is something I can do as slow as possible,
yeah,
and on my own terms without having to answer to like anybody or I guess this is whoever, but you know, like once it's out, but yeah. So that's, yeah, because if not, I think I would just go a little stir crazy.
I gotta ask, what's your favorite survival horror game right now?
Currently, it's definitely Silent Hill F. I've actually beat it twice, which is a rare thing because I typically, one, attention span very short, so I typically just play like half and move on. And then time restraints, I don't have too much. So to be able to fit it in twice, definitely really, really, really liked it. But of all time, it would be much tougher because like it's the series that I credit, I think, like even getting into the industry to is Resident Evil. Resident Evil 2 specifically. So I always feel like I have to give that the award of favorite horror game of all time was because it's what inspired me into getting into games, into the industry, into basically everything. It honestly changed my trajectory like when I played that. And if besides, I guess, that it would be like the Clock Tower series. So those three.
Oh.
Very current Silent Hill F is my current favorite all time is Resident Evil 2. And then the one that I also just like of all time is Clock Tower series.
It is kind of cool that you have a game series that you can look back on and be like, that launched me into like your career.
I don't know if it was because of how I played it or what. Basically, when I played Resident Evil 2 for the first time, it was at a male friend's house back PS1, and we were like teens, and he just got a PlayStation. He had Resident Evil 2 and Ape Escape, and I don't know why I was so drawn to Resident Evil. And he just kept telling me that I should play Ape Escape, and I didn't want to play Ape Escape. Nothing against Ape Escape, but I didn't like, and maybe this is why I vibe so much with Silent Hill F, is because like the whole, I don't like being told what to do. I just, yeah, even if it's right or wrong, like I want to make my own mistake. So it's like, I don't want to play Ape Escape. I want to play this other one that you're not letting me play. And he said that I could play it until I died, because I think he figured that I would walk into a wall and immediately die. And I got to the police station and like to the liquor, and I didn't have a PlayStation 1. So he was surprised and mad that I had made it like beyond, I guess, like the 2 minutes. So after I died, and I just got up and I like left, and I started saving for a PS1 that day. Took several months to save up all the money, and then realized that I didn't have the money for like the memory card, the game, stuff like that, because being a kid is brutal. But my aunt, she was like, she hooked me up and she got me the memory card and the game, and I bought the system. And with a little extra, I got Resident Evil 1 also. And that was just it after that, there was like no looking back.
That is amazing. We had talked a little bit before we start recording that you had listened to episode 0 of the podcast and you said you had an answer for what we were talking about then. Do you want to tell us what you...
So, yes, I did listen to episode 0 and I was very touched by the topic and curious as to why that they didn't allow space for something to be said about your grandmother. And I had been to a few funerals over the last couple of years. My husband had the unfortunate tragedy of losing his mother and grandmother and father within a year. And each time they had always expressed something towards that person. And we were very small services. And it was all held at the same church. So it was, I was saddened and curious as to why that the church didn't allow space for a few minutes. And I think that it is important to say a favorite memory, to give space if somebody wants to say a favorite memory.
I think for the situation with my grandma, it was a deal of, so I had actually grown up with my grandmother that she had lived basically in a conjoined building with my parents. And so I had known her basically until I turned 18. And then she was getting older and she ended up moving back to where she came from, Oklahoma. And my uncle lived down there. And so she came back to visit a few times, but she would get older. She didn't want to travel. It's a long ways. Basically, we hadn't seen her for a long time. And kind of my uncle kind of seemed to have just kind of taken ownership over the funeral. And I think it's maybe he's just very religious that he met with the priest, the pastor or whatever. And they seemed to just be like, we're going to talk about God a lot. We're going to play these country songs. It's the first funeral that I had been to since I was like a very small kid. And it was like, I was not that close to anybody who had died. It was the first person who I'd really been close to who had passed. And my only connection with funerals is what you see on TV, is that they have it. And then the people come up and say a memory. And my assumption was that is how a funeral goes. And I was thinking in my head of like, as growing up with her, I had things of like the way that I get my eggs cooked. It is literally like I've talked to my girlfriend of like, this is how my grandma did it. Can you try and make eggs like that? And she's made that. And there's this book, The Monster at the End of the book. It's a book with Grover where like,
I'm familiar. My son loves that one.
Yeah, my grandma read that to me when I was little, and I literally have this really cool art print on my wall, like that is like a kid getting that book signed by Grover in the art print. It's really cute, and it makes me think of my grandmother. And I was gonna tell all these stories about her, and they didn't give us any opportunity to, and it did really hurt to not be able to honor her in that way. And that was somewhat the reason that I wanted a place to be able to talk about my grandmother and in a certain way go like, if I pass, I don't want my funeral to be people not knowing who I was. And at least this podcast can be like, well, here's who Bryce was. Why that happened, I think, might have just been like my uncle had a very different vision of what the funeral would be, or he had a different focus on what it should be. But yeah, as someone who cared more about my grandmother than like heaven, I was like, can we talk about her a little bit? So at least the podcast I have somewhere to express that, you know, my feelings about her.
I'm glad you have that. You've given yourself that space, because I think it's important, especially like if you have such beautiful, because I love the monster at the end of the book, and that's a really sweet story, and I'm glad you got to share it, and that you're allowing people to get to know you better, and that's really cool, and I'm glad to get to know you better.
Out of curiosity, and I think you heard on the podcast that the people I was talking to at the time did not care at all about their legacy. Do you think about how you will be remembered? And I will say, hearing about your legacy today, I'm like, even if you don't think about it, it is amazing to think if you could see the fingerprints of your life, being able to see my copies of GTA 5 would have your fingerprints. Everything I make would have your fingerprints a little bit, because you helped inspire me to make Last Geek. So do you think about your legacy or how you'll be remembered in at all? Or
I think about two things. I think about what my father wants of his passing.
Yeah.
And he doesn't want people to be sad. And so he asked for, when he passes, for us to have a barbecue to celebrate. And that was something that stuck with me. I do want to be remembered, but I don't want people to feel sad. So I think, like, I try to be funny a lot, or extra goofy with the people that I like and that I love, because I want them for some reason, I think the most important thing is for people to remember, like, me being funny or being silly or whimsical. And that's what, like, I want my kids to remember me. A lot of stuff changes too, like
of course
when you have kids, so a lot of that shifted to it's such a weird thing, because I was also like really close with my grandmother, and she passed about like 10 years ago, but to this day it's still very, very new. And so I worry about that too. Like, the flip side is, like, I want to be remembered, but I don't want my kids to be sad forever when I go.
Yeah.
So I don't know how to make that happen, but that's the complex place that I find myself in. It's like, I don't want them to feel sad.
I think that the beauty of having kids, and I have an 18-year-old son, that it is a thing of, like, they are our legacy in their own way. And obviously the things that we are not just our children, that I think there's some parents that will be like, I'm just a mom, I'm just the dad, because it's like, you are that girl, you are that girl's sight, you are a crafter, you are someone who helped Rockstar. And also, you are the mother to these children, and who they will become will also be your legacy. And if they grow up happy, then it is a deal of, like, I would like to think that you will be remembered happily because your children grow up happy. And when they look back, they'll be like, I have a good life because of my great mom. That there's a level of, like, you want them to think about you. And just know that, like, that they have a good life because of what you did.
Yes, yes. I would be so happy and peaceful just knowing that that's how I feel. Like, they are my, like, my most important part of my legacy.
Yeah.
And also, I guess, is I hope they appreciate my collection.
Yes.
And so I would like to merge my legacies, and that if they are into the same kinds of stuff, Hopefully they can live through me, through my collection in the future as well. Like I would love to merge the two.
I think that is the beautiful way to think about it. I think this is a great place to end it. Is there a place that people can like follow you or stay up on what you're up to?
I'm still very active on Twitter and it's just, I think it's still the Little Big Trouble handle unless I changed it, which I don't think I did. I'm sorry.
I think it still is, yes.
Yeah, so that's where I am active the most, and I am actually, you know what, I'm on Instagram also as Macabre Mara.
Thank you. And it was lovely talking to you.
Same thing. And your words are really important to me, and I'm extremely grateful to know that I made any kind of positive impact, and thank you for like letting me know also, because it's like I'm really glad. I'm just really glad. So thank you.
You're welcome.